to be the truth and you're not getting it. Our purpose is to help you be right with God. The truth's intent is to lift you up. But sometimes that means having to face things for what they really are. It's far more tempting on my part to just not tell you the truth. You don't tell me the truth and I don't tell you the truth and I'm sure it'll all work out fine. The problem is it won't. So number one is edification. What's the second rule, that leaving the unwholesome part out, what's the second rule of telling what is true? Which, by the way, ought to be mainly Bible first quoted and factual. But what's the second rule? What does that mean? Okay, is it necessary? Is it necessary now? Is it necessary here? I don't know why I thought of this. I was just trying to come up with kind of a mundane example. But I go preach meetings and stuff, and I get picked up at the airport quite a bit by married couples that I don't know, that I've never met, that don't know me. Nothing. And we ride 45 minutes to their house, and I just listen to them talk. And it's sometimes it's like, you guys know I'm here? Like, you know, it's like, I'm going, whoa, this is kind of wild, and I'm recording it and stuff. It's only happened once or twice, and I didn't say where, and it's just, I made it all up. But look, the point is, like, there's a right time and place to have difficult conversations, and then there's a really uncomfortable time and place to do that. Uncomfortable company, situations. Like, what is needed in this moment? I'll tell you what's always needed in the moment, though. What's our topic? What is always needed in every moment is the truth. The truth is always needed in every moment. But the way you choose to share it, sometimes the moment demands that you just demonstrate it. You understand the difference? Sometimes the need of the moment is, I'm just going to show you what it looks like instead of trying to convince you verbally to accept it. That may be the need of the moment. And then lastly, of course, in my favorite part, Ephesians 4:29, I'm trying to share the truth to build you up, trying to be appropriate to our relationship and the moment we're in. And then what's the last thing? What does that mean, Ephesians 4:29, so that it will give grace to those who hear? All right, love, charity, mercy to them. You know, the objective there is for it to be a freedom for them, for it to help them, to give grace to them. And so those are, to me, I mean, Ephesians 4:29 is the thing. I mean, there are a couple of verses in the New Testament that'll help every relationship that you have. One of them is this verse. This is near the very top of the list. The other one's at 1 Peter 3, harmonious, sympathetic. That's great too. Both really, really good. So those are some things that I want you to consider. We want to tell the truth like Jesus did. We want to try to tell it from the scripture when we can, be careful and factual, but we got to do it the right way. All right, let's move to this. The Pharisees were not always honest. They sometimes chose to be dishonest. And how did they justify their dishonesty? That should be chapter 23. If you did your lesson at home, you know that. Well, you know that it shouldn't be Matthew 20. You may not have found Matthew 23, but look in Matthew chapter 23. In Matthew chapter 23, there's a main argument. This is some of the harshest language Jesus used about the Pharisees in all of his ministry. Keep in mind, it's near the end of his ministry. He's been putting up with them patiently for a very long time. And in chapter 23, what's kind of the big point that he's making about their ministry? Like all these verses together, what is he saying about them? What are they? They're blind, and the main word we use is they're hypocrites. They're really concerned with image. They're really concerned with rank. They're really concerned with people being impressed with them. But behind that, he said, is you're like a whitewashed tomb. The tomb looks very good, but inside is rottenness. And so he's addressing that. So in Matthew chapter 23, in verse 16, he just kind of gets into this. He says, "Woe to you blind guides who say, whoever swears by the temple, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple is obligated. You fools and blind men, which is more important, the gold or the temple that sanctified the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the offering on it, he is obligated. You blind men, which is more important, the offering or the altar that sanctifies the offering? Therefore, whoever swears by the altar swears both by the altar and everything on it, and whoever swears by the temple swears both by the temple and by him who dwells within it, by God. And whoever swears by heaven swears both by the throne of God and by him who sits on it. Now, this is an interesting verse for a couple of reasons. It matches Matthew 5, where we're effectively told not to swear. You know what we mean by swear? We don't mean to say a cuss word. We mean to obligate yourself through some theater. And that's kind of what a vow or swearing is. You know, I swear on, and we come up with some dramatic source or something. I make this vow or something on that. Jesus, I don't think he's saying it's wrong to make vows in Matthew 5. It's sort of the big not but setup. He's like, the vows and the verbiage and the pomp don't matter. What matters is you're an honest person and you stand by your word. Tell me a little bit about what you think was going on with the Pharisees here. Why is he saying, you got to swear by this, and you say it's nothing, you swear by that, and you're obligated? What do you think's going on with them? How they justified it by semantics, I guess. Why is he critiquing them for this behavior? What do you think they were doing? Yes?
It's a deception. That's why Jesus called them later on in verse 33, you serpent, you're a viper, you're a deceiver. All you're doing is you're holy in your sight, and you're nothing but a devil.
They look truthful. They portray themselves as truthful. They're liable to use some vast verbiage of their truth, I swear, on the altar, but it's like they've got their... You guys remember this? Who does not remember these bad boys? Remember these? Had my fingers crossed. There's a reason, and I think we really believed in this. Did anybody not really believe in this? Like, I think this was an actual divine thing. Like, this changes everything. Like, because everybody knows the rules on this. This means I didn't really mean it, and you should have checked that. That's how we looked at it. Like, it really meant something to us. Now, we know it doesn't mean anything, but to us it did. Like, for them, they were so bought into, there's a time to be honest and there's a time to cover it up. There's a time to show people who you really are, not often, and there's a time to portray yourself as something else. And so we swear and we promise and we say all the right things, and there's always some loophole I can give you. If I had to guess how the Pharisees were, it was basically like this. When I make a promise, there's a reason why I don't have to keep it. But when you make a promise to me, you better keep it. I think that's kind of the idea. Like, well, I only swore by this. That doesn't matter. But you swore by him, and it does. And Jesus is coming back, and he's saying, you're a mess because you want to justify deception for the sake of image. I think that's the big thing with the Pharisees, and I think that's a big thing for Christians today. None of us go, hey, it's okay to lie and we should deceive others. But our sense of image, our sense of acceptance, of not wanting to be vulnerable. I have to tell you guys, and I put it in an episode that will come out next week, but I got a chance to talk to high school kids about the spiritual, what we share in Christ, like our relationship in Jesus, and from the lessons last week, and how we actually go about sharing them. And one of the young ladies said, we should go about really sharing our fellowship by being willing to be honest and vulnerable and open with each other to get help and to give help. And I thought, I want to wrap that in a gift and mail it to everybody. I want you to think about those words. Honest and open and vulnerable so that you can get the help that you need and you can give the help that you need. You guys know there's a reason why the fabric on these front rows looks better than the fabric on every other row. You know, that's like, these are going to be really richly reddish 10 years from now, and those are all going to be worn out. You know why? People don't do this anymore. It's an overstatement, but based on my life, it's very hard for us to just be honest. Pretense and image becomes the truth. Has social media contributed to that? A little bit. By that I mean a lot. Like, how we're seen is more important than what's real. Pharisees had a merit badge in that. What it looks like as opposed to what it really is. Now, we're going to talk about self-deception tonight before we're done. But I just want you to understand that when it comes to lying and being dishonest, it's not all about, I just like to lie. There's usually some issue here that is leading to that. And that brings us to this. I quote, put truth in the inner man in quotes because it was a main point in Jacob's chapter and well made. How does all of this start? The way you're honest, how you are honest with yourself, how you approach others. How does all of this start with the truth in the inner man? What does that mean? The inner man, truth in the inner man. That's where all this is going to work out. It is your heart. The inner man of the Pharisees, not real good. So their path to greater honesty was not going to be easy because they were so self-deceived. They elevated themselves so high they couldn't even see how blind they were. And I don't know if they ever saw it. But the real truth comes in the inner man. I want to show you a couple things. Go with me to David's Psalm, Psalm 51. I wonder if these two psalms were hard for David to write. You know his two psalms? Psalm 51 and Psalm 32. What did David write about in Psalm 51 and Psalm 32 that probably was not a lot of fun to write about? His sin with Bathsheba, his adultery, the murder, and the sin. And in Psalm 51, verse 6, we talk about how David had a heart like God's heart. He made a lot of bad decisions, not just one or two, quite a few. God was super patient with him. But one of the things you had is verse 6. Behold, you desire truth in the innermost being, and in the hidden part you will make me to know wisdom. That first part of verse 6 is a lot like the idea of David having a heart like God. God said, what I'm looking for is I'm looking for you to be honest and truthful in your heart. I'm looking for you to honestly feel and accept what is right. How is it ever going to come out right if it's not right in here? How are you ever going to be honest with anyone if you're not honest with yourself? Sometimes when you're being honest about someone else, watch this. It's not just being honest about yourself. My first statement is true. You can't be honest with someone else about yourself if you're not honest with yourself about yourself. But you know what else is true? Sometimes you think you're trying to be honest about someone else, but your motives are not right here. So even that's messed up. Everything starts with God is looking for truth in verse 6, the inward parts and the innermost being. And what's interesting is verse 7 and following, that's what David's calling for. Purify my heart. Make me honest. And you know what we mean. Like, make me honest here. Make me honest with myself. Make me honest with you. I've sinned against no one but you. He'd sinned against others, but he considered it like a sin just against the Lord. But I think David had a heart like that. So let me ask you something. Psalm 51 is this great chapter about David's confession and turning. Psalm 32 is the same story. When David tried to stay silent about his sin, he's lied. Cover up, you call it whatever you want. Deception, cover up. He was trying, it's a whole story about how trying to get Bathsheba's husband like to go back and sleep with her, basically. Because then it would be his kid. And then like get him drunk so he'll go to sleep. Like really try. He was trying all the deceptive stuff. How did it feel in David's heart to be a liar? To cover it up. To make it, to hope it went away. What does Psalm 32 verses 3 and 4 say? Psalm 32, verses 3 and 4. When I kept silent about my sin, it didn't bother me at all. Because I had already pretty much convinced myself that I was right, and really this was Bathsheba's problem. And her husband's problem. Like, is that what you see here? Because that's where honesty can never happen. But listen to this. When I kept silent about my sin. So let's see what's going on in that innermost being, bud. He said, I'll tell you what it was like in there. My body wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night, he said, your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was drained away as with the fever heat of summer. What did it feel like for David to house deception in his heart? To live a lie. It was killing him. Why? Because he had a heart for the Lord. I don't want to scare you tonight. I want to terrify you. If you are deceiving lying, covering, grandstanding, like the Pharisees did. If it is in you and it is not right and it is comfortably residing in your heart and doesn't affect you at all, you are in serious trouble. Serious trouble. There's a chance you may get cornered one day and have to tell the truth and admit it, and God still won't forgive you. You say, whoa, once I've said the truth, He's going to forgive me. God is looking for a heart that loves the truth. Getting caught and having to admit it is not the same thing as loving the truth. It's just having to give it up. You got to give up the lie. I cannot emphasize enough the need, and this is why we spend so much time in the Gospels. We spend so much time at the feet of Jesus. We spend so much time trying to have belief that tenderizes our hearts to yearn for Him so that lies can't feel comfortable inside of us. Now, you give a lie enough time, it'll feel pretty good in there. And now you're in one of the most terrifying places anyone could ever be. A heart that cannot accept it. So David, to me, he's such an interesting, weird case guy. I think he lied more than a few times, honestly. Remember when he acted like he was a crazed, like rabies-bitten animal to try not to get killed? Like, that was pretty deceptive. He had issues with that. It was one of his issues. He was tormented by sin. And that's why he always finds his way back to God. So as we get down to some of this near the end, I've got just some verses here. All these verses over here, Galatians 6, 1 Corinthians 6, also 1 Corinthians 15, which we'll look at on Sunday, I think, next week. James 1, all of these verses, if you looked at them, they all use this same phrase. So if you look at one of those verses, you'll have it. What's the phrase that gets used? It's certainly more dangerous than deceiving someone else, which is a lie, which is wrong. What does it say? Do not be deceived. And when you look at this text, I don't think it's as much some fancy talking preacher deceiving you. It is you accepting what is untrue and deceiving yourself. I don't know, probably not totally appropriate for Bible class to mention, I guess. But I got a great book back there somebody recommended a few years ago. Leadership and Self-Deception by this group, this Arbinger group. And man, I mean, there's this guy at work and stuff, and it's always somebody else's. Like, he had so positioned himself. He had so positioned himself in a place of right that, like, their baby would get up in the middle of the night and it would take his wife too long to get up and mind the baby, and he would just be furious at her because she's being lazy and she's being inconsiderate. Like, he was so right. Never mind the fact that she'd already been up four times and she was totally exhausted and you need to get up. No, not one time. I shouldn't have said that. I really hated getting up too when my kids were little. But like this whole process of this guy realizing that, man, I'm in the box of self-deception. You know what the box of self-deception looks like? Guess whose fault it always is? It's always somebody else's fault. Always. Even if you point out something that I have done that I should not have done, even if you catch me in a lie, guess what? That's still somebody else's fault. I wouldn't have had to do it if they hadn't done this. Ultimately, those people live in a box that feels like their number one goal in life is to protect themselves. And what they end up doing is hurting everyone else. We're Christians. Love Ralph's stuff last week. We surrendered self and we became the part of a body of Christ. You're in the body of Christ. You're a part of contributing to the benefit of the whole. And so self-deception becomes dangerous to us all. So those verses are really good as it goes through that idea of self-deception. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's why prayer is a great place to start. Yeah. Yeah, and let me just tell you, self-deception can get so brutal that even in your prayers, you fail to be truly honest about what is happening. Boy, that's level 10. Because God knows everything, and you know He knows everything, and you're still fashioning it in a way that makes it about you, and the burden is on other people. I'm just telling you, be careful. So yeah, don't lie. I mean, you don't need 40 minutes for that. Don't tell lies. But more importantly is, how do you tell the truth to other people? How do you go about that? And more importantly than that, is there a lot of truth going on here? Are you being honest before you speak? If we are recreated in His image, what happens? And these are great verses, we know them. What happens to lying? I mean, it's the old me. The old me is lying. And that's what you have, especially, I mean, you have these in the Gospels as well, but certainly in Colossians 3. Colossians 3 says, I've been remade into the image of Jesus, and Jesus is truth. And Jesus tells the truth. He does it judiciously and appropriately and wonderfully, but He's always telling the truth and believing the truth. And so there's that great idea.
Really, that are in a someone.
This is right.
But like, let's just say, I'm going to go drink some water and come to sit down and said that lie can't hurt anyone, right?
Can't hurt me. Why would you tell it then?
Why would I tell it?
If it doesn't hurt anybody.
How do I know if it would hurt anybody or not? Would it hurt anybody if I were to say that I was going to drink water in the water fountain and I did it and I came sat here?
Why'd you tell me that if you didn't do it?
No, but I'm asking you, could that hurt someone?
I like Guillermo. Guillermo's my buddy. No, it wouldn't hurt anyone. But the question is, why would I say it and not do it? And sometimes it's just because something happened. Sometimes it's not a lie. Sometimes you intended to do what was right and, you know, there was no water in the fountain.
No, but I intentionally did it to lie.
Okay, well,
God said don't lie.
I wanted attention because I knew I wasn't going to drink water and I was going to sit
down. I like how you're being honest about it now. You're like, I just wanted to get attention.
But I know that it can't hurt anybody, that little lie, would it?
But lying is not about whether you hurt someone or not. It's about integrity. It's about who you are. Be a person who lives the truth and tells the truth. And then as you do that, then you'll help other people, not hurt them too. Sometimes we get too focused on the outcome. A lie is okay if it, see what Guillermo's getting at. A lie is okay if it doesn't hurt someone. But the point is that this is about Colossians 3. It's about me becoming like Christ, which means that I'm permeated with truth for truth's sake. All right?
And at least I said the truth. There's a lot of liars that won't tell me the truth.
I believe that's true. Yeah, go ahead.
But there's a lot of people lying not to harm somebody else, but to prevent harm coming upon them. To be responsible for their own actions. So it's not necessarily they want to harm somebody. They want to protect themselves.
Yeah, that's probably the number one reason. Self-preservation. But becoming a Christian is sort of a self-surrendering over to the Lord. That's a great way to finish this. There are a couple thoughts here at the end that you can look at on your own in this class about... I wanted to bring up Rahab because I knew we'd run out of time. We wouldn't get to talk about her. But I think that we need radical honesty about sin and we need to speak it in love. I would say this last thing. Reserve your most direct, unapologetic, face-to-face honesty for truth that helps people get out of sin. Don't waste it on things that you can't even prove are a sin or you don't that only matter to you. Make it things that are really, really going to matter to God. And that just requires some study. Thank you guys for your attention. Jonathan Helvey will be teaching on Sunday, and the notes are in the back so you can be prepared to work through that with him. Thank you.